This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. Your source for Pan-African news and world developments, I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yehiz Wuhib. Coming up on Africa News Tonight,
we have to really make sure that all efforts are being made so we stop further transmission in the early stages.
That's World Health Organization spokesman Tarik Jesrovic talking about the Ebola outbreak in the Democratic Republic of Congo. Details coming up.
Also, political unrest still lingers in Burundi's capital, and the UN Human Rights Office is calling on the government of Algeria to stop expelling migrants.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight.
Aid agencies are hoping for the best while preparing for the worst with the Ebola outbreak in the Democratic Republic of Congo. The latest figures from DRC's Ministry of Health say 51 confirmed or suspected cases of the virus have been reported, with 27 deaths. Most worrying is that Ebola has spread from two isolated villages to the provincial capital of Mbandaka, home to more than a million people and a gateway to other urban areas. But an experimental vaccine is being used on those most at risk, and the quick domestic and international response means there's growing hope the outbreak can be contained before it spins out of control. World Health Organization spokesman Tarik Jesrovic talks with VOA's Paul Alexander about the challenges of tackling such a contagious and often fatal disease.
So we are receiving the reports of new cases. What is really worrying that now we have in total six cases in Mbandaka City. That's the regional capital of Equatorial Province in northern western part of the country. And we know that just like any other disease, it is more difficult to contain the transmission of a virus in urban areas. It also means that we need to deploy efforts to multiple locations now. So we need to significantly scale up our response in terms of having epidemiological teams to do active case research, to do contact tracing, to have teams to do safe and dignified burials. We already deployed two mobile laboratories in Mbandaka and in Bikoro area. And as you probably know, we have started the vaccination yesterday in Mbandaka. So there is a serious risk of further spread. This is why we raised our assessment level, if you wish, noting that Mbandaka is on the shore of the Congo River and it has air connection to the capital, Kinshasa. So we have to really make sure that all efforts are being made so we stop further transmission in the early stages. The access is not easy. We were forced to put an air bridge in place to have a UN flight from Kinshasa to Mbandaka and then onward helicopter flights to Bikoro to bring in experts and supplies. So already the logistics of this response are quite challenging, and we hope that we will not need to go to more locations to do the same.
Have you been able to get air access to both of these villages now? Because as I understand it, there was difficulty even clearing space for helicopters to land at one of them.
No, you're absolutely right. For example, airstrip in Bikoro cannot receive planes, so we have to use helicopters. To the nearby villages, we go by motorbikes because these are terrain without paved roads. And I have lived in Congo myself, and I remember how difficult it is to move in this terrain where sometimes, you know, after rains, the little forest paths that normally you can go with the motorbikes become inaccessible. So it is very challenging. For example, for vaccines, we need to bring fuel for generators that would keep the freezers working so vaccines can be kept at a very low temperature so they can be used. You can imagine that all of that is taking, it costs a lot, it takes lots of effort. We are working closely with the partners on the ground, the World Food Program, with the UN mission to DRC to support the Ministry of Health in this logistical challenge.
So is there a treatment regime now? I know that we have the vaccine that's being used for the ring protection.
We are discussing with the Democratic Republic of the Congo the use of experimental therapeutics. So just as we did for vaccines, because the vaccines have not been licensed, we needed to put in place a specific protocol on use based on an expanded access framework and good clinical practices. There was also a need for importation permits. So there are steps to be taken if products that are not being licensed are to be used on the basis of compassionate use. What we all always have to go back to is that good supportive treatment, including basic IV fluids and antibiotics, increases significantly chances of survival.
That was VOA's Paul Alexander speaking with WHO spokesman Tarek Jaserevich.
South Sudan's warring parties failed to sign a peace deal today following 5 days of intensive negotiations by delegates in the Ethiopian capital. Waki Simon Wudu, a reporter with VOA's South Sudan in Focus program, is at the talks in Addis Ababa and reports regional mediators have drafted a proposal addressing some of the sticking points. The parties are expected to sign that proposal. How to share power appears to be the key stumbling block amid accusations that no one is willing to compromise on the main issues.
The Human Rights Office is calling on the government of Algeria to stop the collective expulsions of thousands of migrants, mainly from sub-Saharan Africa, condemning this practice as a violation of international human rights law. Lisa Schlein reports from the Rights Office in Geneva.
Between March 8th and April 19th, the UN Human Rights Office reports Algerian authorities carried out at least six mass roundups of sub-Saharan African migrants in Oran, Douira, and Boufarik. Spokeswoman Ravina Shamdasani says raids reportedly are carried out on construction sites in neighborhoods where migrants live, and some are picked up in the street and detained. She tells VOA the problem with the collective expulsions is no distinctions or individual assessments of the migrants are made.
We are told that people are often just arrested and detained without even checking their documents. Of the 25 people that my colleague spoke to in Niger, only one said that she actually had her passport checked. And most of them were asked to provide thumbprints on documents in Arabic. Now, most of them don't read Arabic.
Shamdasani says many of the migrants were not allowed to pick up their belongings before they were expelled and had to leave everything they had behind. She says some migrants were transferred rapidly to Niger. Others, she says, were detained in reportedly inhuman and degrading conditions in military bases.
Nigerians are transferred by bus to Agadez in Niger, while the others are crammed into big trucks to be transferred to the Nigerian border, where they are then abandoned and left to walk for hours in the desert heat to cross the border into Niger. We heard testimony indicating that the migrants who do remain in Algeria are understandably very fearful.
Shamdasani says UN monitors have conveyed their dismay about these collective expulsions to the Algerian authorities. She will not discuss their response, but notes many governments raise so-called security issues as reasons for deportations. Under international human rights law, migrants shall not be subjected to arbitrary arrest or detention, nor arbitrarily deprived of property or documents. It says returns should be carried out in safe conditions and with dignity. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
The shadow cast by the Burundian government's crackdown on the 2015 political unrest lingers over the capital, and tightened security measures continue to be observed. Residents must keep logbooks in their homes where they note down anyone who visits government security services can stop by demanding to see the logs, and failure to produce them can result in arrest. Mohamed Yasuf reports from Bujumbura.
Serugo Mujango. kuindi baje twandika.
22-year-old Irakuze lives in one of the neighborhood where protests erupted in 2015. She has not fled her area, but she has spent much of her time alone. She says it is 2 years since the government gave her the book, and she has not received any visitor because people are afraid. The Burundian authorities distributed notebooks in homes so people can register their family members and those who visit them. People are required to report any visitor to the government's area chief. Failure to report and register a visitor can be a ticket to jail. Police enforce the regulations with frequent searches, something that terrifies Irakoze. She explains, police knock the door by force, scare her family, wake up her children from their sleep. And the sound of the knock can have an impact even on those who are sick. She says sometimes you think you are being attacked by criminals. They come with a lot of force to do their search. Security agencies believe keeping record of people's movements will help them maintain peace and security. Some people support the policy. 68-year-old Duabike Michel says the logbook keeps him safe. He says it is good to have the book because no one bothers you. He says there is no fine if you keep the record of the visitors at home, and it is good to live freely without fear. A man who lives in Chibitoke neighborhood, an area that has protested against President Pierre Nkurunziza's rule, told VOA the police search is not about improving security, but to punish people for their political views. He says it's not bad to do searches, but they do a lot of searches in areas where people protested against the government. But in the areas where there were no protests, they do not do searches. He adds, it does not mean that all bad people come from the area. The whole search issue has a political agenda. The 2015 unrest was sparked by the president's decision to run for a controversial third term. Last week, Burundians approved a new constitution that will allow Nkurunziza to potentially stay in office until 2034. The United States said the process was marred by a lack of transparency and efforts to intimidate the opponents. Mohamed Yusuf for VOA News, Bujumbura.
Coming up on 18 minutes past the hour, this is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America. Well, mental illnesses are the most common health conditions around the world. In Liberia, people of all ages suffer from various forms of mental illnesses, mostly stemming from years of conflict and the devastating impact of the Ebola crisis. The Carter Center has implemented programs in some schools in Liberia to help children and adolescents cope with the pressures of life. I visited the William V. S. Tubman High School in Monrovia, where the program is changing the way students and parents view mental health problems. For young people, dealing with a mental health problem can not only be frightening, but it can also stigmatize a young person. At the William V. S. Tubman High School in Monrovia, Principal Alassers Goldore talked about how the mental health program has helped his school better deal with students with behavioral problems, as well as helped students to stay focused on their studies.
We are very grateful to the Carter Center, who came to rehabilitate our former clinic, refurbish it, and supply drugs for curative purposes. In addition to that, brought a mentor clinicians to help our students, because some of them, their behavior issue condition is not only due to illness, physical illness, but also because of psychosocial situation.
Goldori explained that years of conflict and the Ebola crisis left many children and adolescents without any guardians. As a result, they were more susceptible to behavioral problems and drug addictions.
Some of them were directly or indirectly affected, either by direct participation in the war or being victimized through the process, or close relatives. And also with the presence of drugs, the war really increased the level of drug in our country. And bulk of our young people have been gravitated toward taking drugs, which has affected them mentally, which has affected them even when it comes to their performance, because they say a stimulant is something depressive.
Leah Sorbo is a mental health clinician who works along with the school principal and guidance counselor to identify and treat mental health and behavior problems. She described the types of cases she deals with on a daily basis at the school.
The cases that we often see at the school, they are different from cases that we see in the community. And some of the cases that are often TUA at the school level are children with PTSD, post-traumatic disorder, and we most often see children with anxiety because, you know, someone is having attention from the school, from the classroom, and they are not getting along with the lesson. So for that reason, they have that fear of, you know, taking tests, fear of doing their lesson, fear of staring because of some issues that they are faced with from the instructor in class. I also see children with OCD. I also see children with conduct behavior.
Sorbo said sometimes the student comes to the school but does not want to come inside, and she will have to go outdoors to bring them in. If a student is disruptive in class, the instructor will send the student to the school guidance counselor.
We access the guidance counselor, and we have a form that we call the consent form. The child will access that consent form from in the guidance counselor office, and after that, we have to bring them to the clinic. And when they bring them to the clinic, the child will access the health assistant first for registration. And after registration, the child will also access the hour in there because we do medical before we can be able to diagnose our mental health problem. Then they refer them to me where I have to do the psychosocial aspects of the child.
Sorbo points out that in some cases, a parent or guardian may be contributing to the student's problem, so there is also a program tailored to parents. One parent explains how the program has helped her with her children at school.
The meeting we can have here, they can teach us and talk to us so that we can talk to the children. I never knew the importance to even talk to children.
Susan is a student at the high school. She is 19 years old and in the 11th grade. She explained how the mental health program has helped her.
It really helped me a lot because for me, I have some program in my house with my mommy, and I have some program with my friends with me at school. So then I come and discuss it with the health technician, and then she helped me so much.
Susan meets twice a week with the mental health clinician. She said the counseling has helped her to stay focused on her schoolwork and on her goal of pursuing a career as a petroleum engineer. Kim Lewis, VOA News, Monrovia, Liberia.
The United Nations Population Fund is urging Zimbabwe's government to come up with policies that curtail high teenage fertility rates and high maternal mortality rates prevailing in the southern African country. Sebastian Monfu reports from Harare for VOA News.
The head of the UN Population Fund in Zimbabwe, Esther Muiya, made the plea Tuesday after the government released a report showing teenage fertility rates and maternal mortality rates are still high. The infant mortality rate was estimated at 52 deaths per 1,000 live births, while the under 5 mortality rate was 72 deaths per 1,000 live births. The maternal mortality rate was 525 deaths per 100,000 live births. On the high total fertility rate, which is largely accounted for by young women in rural areas, Muiya says Zimbabwe has to change its policies if it wants people to become more economically productive.
It means there's a problem somewhere to give birth when they want, how many children they want. Therefore, do they have enough information that can help them make informed decision? Two, if this is the age group giving birth, it means it's interrupting their education. How productive do we expect them to be?
Zimbabwe's economy has been in the doldrums for nearly two decades now, with critics attributing that to the populist policies of former President Robert Mugabe, who resigned under military pressure last November. Zimbabwe National Statistics Agency head Mutasa Dzinotizei said Tuesday he is worried about a separate part of the new report that showed that most Zimbabweans earn their living from informal employment.
The country must move away from informal sector to formal sector employment in the productive sectors of the economy. In other words, policymakers must realize that a huge disproportionate number of people are in these vulnerable or underemployed, and therefore they must come up with policies to generate formal sector employment.
For years, Zimbabwe's unemployment rate has been estimated to be as high as 90%, although no one really knows for sure. President Emmerson Mnangagwa, who took over from Mugabe, has promised to create millions of formal jobs if he wins Zimbabwe's elections, though he has not explained how. Elections could be held as early as July or August. Sebastian Mofu for VOA News, Harare.
Well, some 200 people who traveled to Australia for the Gold Coast Commonwealth Games have applied for refugee visas, a sharp increase from previous estimates. Athletes from several nations, including members of some African national teams, disappeared from the Games village in Queensland last month. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
Refugee campaigners believe some of the 200 Commonwealth Games athletes and support staff who are seeking asylum don't want to go home because they fear they'll be persecuted because of their sexuality. Another 50 participants whose visas have expired have yet to contact Australian authorities, but would still be able to apply to stay. Officials won't confirm their nationalities, but reports say they're from Cameroon, Rwanda, Sierra Leone and Uganda. Sarah Dale is a solicitor from the Refugee Advice and Casework Service, which is acting on behalf of some of the asylum seekers.
We've heard lots of examples in the media recently, such as people who fear harm based on identifying as homosexual. In a number of Commonwealth countries, it is criminalised to be homosexual. So it's certainly our experience that we will see some people who are granted protection. But as for the overall figures, we're not going to know that until the end of processing.
Initially, it was thought only about a dozen people hadn't returned home when the Games in Queensland State finished in the middle of April. The official number of athletes and staff has been disclosed at a parliamentary hearing in the Australian capital, Canberra. Australia's Department of Home Affairs said it would try to assess the applications as quickly as possible, but didn't specify how long the process would take. The assessment of some of the claims has already started. About 8,000 people arrived in Australia for the Commonwealth Games, an event held every 4 years that brings together members of a global grouping that emerged at the end of the British Empire. In 2006, after the Commonwealth Games in Melbourne, 45 people either overstayed their visas or claimed asylum in Australia. The government in Canberra is increasing its annual intake of refugees this year to 18,750 people. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com.
For listeners on VOA's Nairobi FM station, please stay tuned for the Swahili Evening News coming up at 16:30 UTC.
For all other listeners, please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports. Tune in again at 1800 UTC for another edition of Africa News Tonight. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Linus Rimkus, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
VOA Africa presents a message in the public interest from the U.S. Centers for Disease Control.
Many times when a man becomes sick with Ebola, it is the woman who cares for him. And then what happens? Then the woman becomes sick. And then who cares for the woman? The grandmother or a family member. Then the children can become infected, as well as others having direct contact with the sick person. This is how Ebola can pass from one person to another in the community. And remember, with the right information and together with our healthcare workers, we can protect ourselves from Ebola.
That was a message in the public interest from the U.S. Centers for Disease Control, brought to you by VOA Africa.
VOAAfrica.com.
On VOAAfrica.com,
The news updates never stop. Our primary goal is to keep you informed.
VOAAfrica.com, your trusted source for news and information.